Well, before I get started, I'm going to ask God to help me set aside everything I think I know about you, God, the steps, the big book, recovery, what's best for me, what's best for others, especially let go of all my old ideas so I can live in your truth. Amen. For those who haven't been here before, this meeting's a little bit different. We study the big book.
Speak up, please.
We study the big book, and we have three meetings. We have one tonight, obviously, Saturday morning at 9:15, Sunday at night at 6. We're in our 10th year, and I don't even know how many meetings I've done, 1,400 or something. This Saturday, if you can make it, we're covering the pages in the big book that changed my life. We're in the fourth step on Saturday, and we're on page 66 and 67, and we're going to look at how we get free of anger. And the simple steps that we take whenever we get angry to be free of anger. So if you can join us Saturday. On Saturday, we started the fourth step. We're that part of the book. I've already done two, an introduction to the fourth step, and I've done two in resentments. And this will be the third part. And then we'll finish with the fourth column the following week. On Sunday night, we're at a different part of the book. We finished to wives, and we're going to read the family afterwards. If you're new to the big book and you've never read it, please join us. It really teaches us the spiritual principles that we're to practice in all affairs and how we can live a life of service to ourselves and others and God. So if you can join us on Sunday night, then when we finish the book on, we don't do all the stories at this meeting. When we finish A Vision for You, we'll do Dr. Bob's story, and then we start the book again. On Wednesday night, tonight, we started the big book over, I believe, recently. I'm getting old. And we're on There's a Solution tonight. And we have a website, experiencethebigbook.org. Since March of last year, I've recorded all the meetings. We have the whole big book recorded, and I've written 60 or 70 thoughts on recovery, covering the steps. So if you're interested, you can check it out. Tonight, we are on There's a Solution. Now, why do we study the big book? Because the big book is called Alcoholics Anonymous. It was written in 1939. Before this book was written, there was no hope for me. This is the program of recovery. We have a fellowship, and we love the fellowship. But the cement that binds us together is the program, the 12 steps. And as she was saying, our relationship with God is dependent on me working the steps. And if I don't have a relationship with God, I have no power to live, and I have no power not to drink. And the big book, when it was written, it's laid out. We read the forewords, and we read Doctor's Opinion, which tells us the problem, which we all have. He described it. He wasn't an alcoholic, but he took care of us, and he explained our allergy of our body, that we can't control how much we drink. Anybody have that? And then he described the sense of ease and comfort that we seek sober from alcohol, and we can't fight that when our mind tells us we want to drink, and we have an obsession of the mind that tells us to drink even if we don't want to. Now, if you have those two things, You're screwed, because you can't drink because you can't control how much you drink, and you have no power to choose not to drink. So, but yet there are people who wrote this book, and in the foreword they said they had a seemingly hopeless condition of mind and body. Now, before, and what they found was these steps to a spiritual solution to their spiritual problem. And so the doctor's opinion tells us the manifestations of alcohol, the lack of control, the loss of choice. And they hint that our real problem is that we're separated from God. And we live a life of a spiritual illness. And when we do that, we don't feel good. And then we read Bill's story, which is just great. I don't know how many times we've gone through it. But it's an example of a story of hope. So that's how the book, because when this book was written, there was no AA, there was no meetings. They wrote this book for you to read it and be able to do this and then share it with someone else. And Bill's story is a story of hope. And he shows in the first 8 pages how he was a hopeless alcoholic. He was defeated. He said, alcohol was my master. He was dying. And it was 1934. There was no AA. There's no place to go. He said fear sobered him up a bit, remember? But then he drank again because he's an alcoholic. And then he saw the doctor, Dr. Silkworth, who told him what was wrong with him. So he says, great, I know what's wrong with me now. I'm not going to drink. And he said self-knowledge lasted, what, a week? And then he was dying. He was sitting in his kitchen on a November morning in Brooklyn. And God said, you know, I don't want alcoholics to die anymore. And I want to give a spiritual message to the world on principles, my spiritual principles of how to live. And I'm going to send it to alcoholics because they'll be desperate enough to want to do it. And he said Abby Thatcher to Bill W. on that November, that Saturday morning. And Abby had been to the, he was 60 days sober, and he'd been to the Oxford group, which is a group of people trying to practice Christian spiritual principles, and they had six steps on how to have a relationship with God. And Abby told him about this, and Bill fought it, of course, right? He's dying, but he didn't want to hear about God. But then Bill changed his mind. He was willing to believe, and he worked the steps in Towns Hospital. We looked at those pages. And then he went out to carry the message. Then he met Dr. Bob in 1935 in May, 6 months later. He was going to drink, Bill, remember? He was in the lobby. He had gone there to a big business deal in Akron. Bill had been a very successful stockbroker and lawyer, but he was broke. And the deal went through, and he had no money. And he didn't know how he was going to pay his hotel bill. And he went down to the lobby, and he heard the gay music in the bar. And he said, you know, I'm going to go in there. It'll make me feel better. And then as he was crossing the threshold, he said, well, I thought maybe I could have one drink, remember? And then he shivered, and fear gripped him. That was God saying, bad idea, Bill. And he knew that when he had worked with other alcoholics, that it had kept him from drinking. And he turned away. Think about it. He turned away from the bar, and he turned to find somebody he could call, and he found Dr. Bob, and we're here today. And now we had this chapter, There's a Solution. And we read page 17 last week, which is, they say, is the most important page for newcomers to know and oldcomers to remember. And page 17 tells us that there's two powers that we have to have. We have to have a power of the fellowship, which is we're all alcoholics. Everybody say you're an alcoholic tonight? So we have a common peril. We were all on the Titanic. We hit the ice. We were all in the water, right? And we were rescued, and we made it to shore. Now, in the Titanic, those people gave each other hugs and sang Kumbaya, and then they went their way, right? But we're here together. But they say that won't keep us. That won't hold us together. That is not the necessary power we need. And they say the great news is that we have a program of action, a solution, and a way out on which we all agree, and that's the 12 steps. So fellowship is great. Without the 12 steps, it won't give you the necessary power to live. So you need the two powers, and the fellowship saved my life till I could able to do this and get the power in my relationship with God. So we read those first three pages, and now we're on page 20. So I hope that gives you some understanding of how the book's laid out. So now you're an alcoholic, you're dying. I don't know about you, but the basement's where I would go when things got pretty bad. Any other basement people here? I'm the only one. Well, the basement was safe because there's a lot going on upstairs, and I could just close the door. But we're getting to the point now where they're going to tell us in the next two pages to page 24 exactly why we're powerless. And then on page 25, they're going to tell us the solution. And then the chapter ends with the story of Roland Hazard going to Dr. Young and finding out the spiritual solution to the disease of alcoholism. So we're on page 20, and it says, you may have already asked yourself, you're reading the book, you ask yourself, why it is that all of us became so very ill from drinking. So you want to know why they were so ill, and you're asking yourself, this, maybe they'll tell me why I'm so ill, right? Doubtless you're curious to discover how and why, in the face of expert opinion to the contrary, we have recovered from a hopeless condition of mind and body. Now notice the word recovered. Recovered from a hopeless condition of mind and body. So if you're an alcoholic And you do have a hopeless condition, but it's not hopeless with the solution. It's hopeless without the solution. And the solution to be recovered is a relationship with God, so you have a power that you don't have the obsession to drink anymore. And when you think about it, something tells you, bad idea. Now, before you had this power, nobody would tell you that. And if you wanted a drink, nothing could come between you and the drink. And willpower didn't work. Why? Willpower won't work because my mind, when I decide I want a drink, I can't see anything wrong with it. I can only see what it's going to do for me, not to me. And if you have alcoholism, that thinking will kill you. And the only thing that comes between you and the drink is God. And so they had recovered. They had done the steps. They had recovered from a hopeless condition of mind and body. So if you're reading this book, you would want to know how they did that, right? And it says, if you are an alcoholic who wants to get over it, anybody want to get over it? You may already be asking, what do I have to do? Now, I've seen a lot of new people, and I'm still waiting for someone to come up to me and say, I don't want to drink anymore. What do I have to do? I hear a lot about, I'm willing to do this, but not this. And Sandy Beach says, this is the only question they really ask you in the big book. What do I have to do? And he adds the word next, because it's a series of doing. Now notice it doesn't say, what do I have to think about this? It says, and it's not thinking, it says, what do I have to do? It's action. I'm going to take certain actions, one after the other. And if I do that, then I'll have what they had, which was recovered. So does anybody want to recover? Right. So all you have to do is go from page 20 to page 88 and do everything in here, and you'll be recovered. And it's only this much. It's only this much. You're dying, right? I say go from page 21 to 88, do everything in here, and you're going to live. Now, I was a cancer doctor, and I saw a lot of people die and have terrible things. And if I said, I'm going to give you this book, and you read everything from page 20 to 88 and do everything in it, my God, they'd take it, they'd be doing it right away. Because they'd do anything to get better. So if you're an alcoholic who wants to get over it, this is what you need to do. Now, the next two lines are very important. It's why we studied the book. They tell you the purpose of the book is to answer the question specifically, what do I have to do? So you're going to get specific instructions in the next pages on what do I have to do. Now, if you're a new person, you come to AA, the fellowship, and you see somebody say, great, we're glad you're here. You need to get a sponsor and work the steps and read the big book and go to meetings and not drink. Well, that sounds great, but that's not going to help you. You need to have specific directions, one person working with someone else going through this. And that's why I started this meeting 10 years ago after my son died, so that I could take people through these directions so they would do it, so they didn't have to die in their car like he did at 3 a.m. So they're going to tell you specifically, we shall tell you what we have done. Now the other thing about this book is this book doesn't ask your opinion of anything. There's no chapter here, Michael's opinion of what they did. They don't care. They're going to tell you what they did, and if you want to have what they have, this is what they suggest you do. They don't tell you to do it, but if you don't have a solution, they suggest you try this. So think about it. If you had planned for living, didn't work, and you have no solution, there's a solution right here. So AA, they're telling you right now, they want you to do an experiment. They want you to do what they did and tell us what happens to you. Now Paula told us tonight what happened to her with her changing her emotional sobriety, right? By getting into the book and working the steps. And so it says, before going into a detailed discussion, maybe we ought to summarize some points as we see them. So they're going to tell you what to do. They're going to answer that question. But before they're going to answer that question, they want us to understand why we need to do it. So the way the book's laid out is the next 1, 2, 3, 4 pages is going to tell us a detailed discussion of why we need to do it. So we're not going to cover all these pages tonight, because then people get mad because they won't have a chance to talk. Although I'm getting over that. Yeah, you know, I really don't give a shit, to be honest. But that's my alcoholism. I'm working on it. I'm getting better. I told Lenny I'm giving up. So we're going to read now. At least we're going to talk about control, and then they're going to talk about choice. And then they're going to tell us on page 24, at certain times we have no defense against the first drink. Now, they're not telling you that you're going to have defense against the first drink. They're going to tell you have no defense against the first drink, so then you're going to want to do what they did. But if you don't understand your powerless situation, you may not want to do it. And so remember, this book is a textbook, and it's written for people. And so to get people to do what they did, you have to understand why you want to do it. Now, we talk about surrender and defeat, and they're trying to help you see your defeat. And so when you read the big book, a lot of times you should read in the first person. So I'll try to do that. Sometimes I forget. So they said, how many times people have said this, I could take it or leave it alone, why can't he? Why don't you drink like a gentleman or quit? That fellow can't handle his liquor. Why don't you try beer and wine? Lay off the hard stuff. His willpower must be weak. He could stop if he wanted to. She's a sweet girl. I should think he'd stop for her sake. I love this one. The doctor told him if he ever drank again, it would kill him. But there he is, all lit up again. I mean, when I was 25, and I was an intern, and we used to wheel him up from the emergency room in those days and put him in the bed, and they'd have pancreatitis. And I took care of them a month before, and they told me they're never going to drink again. They're suffering, and then I'm wheeling them up again. And they said, oh, Doc, I mean it this time. I'm really never going to drink again. And then a month later, you go down there. And I said, boy, there's something wrong with these people. You know, and I didn't realize I had the same disease. And so I understand now. They had no power. And so it was ridiculous to even try, you know, now when I'm old now, but when we had somebody in the hospital and they're all lecturing them and they're worried about the potassium and the protime and the liver, I said, listen, if he doesn't stop drinking, it doesn't matter what we do in these 2 weeks, is, you know, it's not going to matter. And but the medical science can't deal with that because they're powerless in their own way, right? They can't give them the power. So when people look at us, they think we're crazy. So it says, now these are commonplace observations of drinkers, which we hear all the time. Now here's a powerful line. Back of them is a world of ignorance and misunderstanding. People are ignorant of what's wrong with us. They think, on tape, I was going to say assholes, but they think we're just really screwed up people. And we don't make sense, right? And so they don't understand this. It's scary. And they think it's about them. That we don't, they don't have some power where they're not good enough that we would stop. And so they don't understand it. And it say, we see that these expressions refer to people whose reactions are very different from ours. See, my wife, when she has a drink of wine, she plays with it, you know? And, you know, people play with their glasses. You see the people swirl the drinks and all that stuff. They leave alcohol in their glasses. They react differently from us. They're not powerless. And so they can't understand powerless. And the one thing that I've noticed the longer I've been in AA is sometimes we get down on people who drink again or they're just powerless. We're no different than they are. We're all powerless. The only reason we're here today is the grace of God. That somehow we were willing to give up enough that God could come in and work in our lives. So it says, moderate drinkers have little trouble in giving up liquor entirely if they have good reason for it. They could take it or leave it alone. They love AA. Moderate drinkers are great AA. They love it. They're sober and they love the fellowship and they love it. Now there's a certain type of hard drinker. He may have the habit badly enough to gradually impair him physically and mentally. It may cause him to die a few years before his time. If a sufficiently strong reason, ill health, falling in love, change of environment or the warning of a doctor becomes operative, this man can also stop or moderate on his own power. They left that out. Although he may find it difficult and troublesome and may even need medical attention. And there are a lot of hard drinkers in AA. And they come here and they want to stop and they stop and they love AA. It's great. But here's the real alcoholic. Now you have to decide if you're a real alcoholic or not. Because if you're a real alcoholic, then you're going to want to do what they did. So they're going to tell you in the next three pages what makes you a real alcoholic. He may start off as a moderate drinker. Well, we all did, right? He may or not become a continuous hard drinker. But here's the deal. At some stage of my drinking career, I began to lose all control of my liquor consumption once I started to drink. Anybody have that? You're usually drunk when that happens. That's what George Charlie said. So you lose the ability to control how much you drink. Now, you know, alcoholics, when they want to drink, they don't go to the liquor store and, like, buy one of those little bottles, right? Right? They don't buy, like, one can of beer, right? They know that they're going to need more than one. So when we go to the liquor store, we make sure we have enough, right? Why? Because we know we can't control how much we drink. And then, in fact, the one major fear of all alcoholics is you're going to run out, right? And remember, that's the warning label that AA said that they should put on all liquor bottles. They wanted to put a warning so people would know that alcohol is dangerous. And they had a congressional hearing, did you know that, 1952? And they invited AA to come. They want to put a warning label on alcohol bottles. So AA says we have no opinion on any outside issues or anything, but we have a suggestion. Put a big label that says, this bottle will run out. Get it? And see, alcoholics laugh. Nobody else understands it because they don't, but it will run out. And did anybody ever hide alcohol? Did anybody worry that they would not have enough, make sure they had enough? See, normal people don't hide liquor. It's not illegal. And they don't worry that they have enough, like on Sunday, do I have enough when the stores weren't open Saturday night? Yeah, because we know we've lost control. So if you have that, you have the allergy of the body. And remember, he says, this defines an alcoholic. Normal people do not have this allergy where they have loss of control. So if you have loss of control when you drink, you're an alcoholic. And it says, here's the fellow who's been puzzling you, especially his lack of control. Now, I don't agree with entirely all this in this paragraph because they make us seem, I think, better than we are. He says he does absurd, incredible, tragic things while drinking. Anybody do that? Now, that's the effect of alcohol. That's not the disease. That's the effect of alcohol, that once we drink it, we do really, really stupid things. He's a real Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. He's seldom mildly intoxicated. He's always more or less insanely drunk. His disposition while drinking resembles his normal nature but little. He may be one of the finest fellows in the world, yet let him drink for a day, and he frequently becomes disgustingly and even dangerously antisocial. He has a positive genius for getting tight at exactly the wrong moment. Anybody do that? He is often perfectly sensible, I don't believe in this, sensible and well-balanced concerning everything except liquor. I think that was a little pat on the back here. But in that respect, he is incredibly dishonest and selfish. But we are dishonest and selfish in all of our ways, right? He often, and I like this, he often possesses special ability, skills, and aptitudes, and has a promising career ahead of him. He uses his gifts to build up a bright outlook for his family and himself, and then pulls the structure down on his head by senseless, serious sprees. Actually, in those few lines is a very powerful message, because it's not enough to have special abilities, skills, and aptitudes for alcoholics. That doesn't help us sober not to drink. It doesn't matter if we have a promising career. It doesn't matter if we have a bright outlook on our family. You see, it doesn't matter what's going on out there. It's never enough to keep us from drinking. Why? Because we're trying to manage the world, right? And when we run the world, we want the world to be perfect out there so we'll feel okay. Anybody else want that? We can never get it right. So we're always irritable, restless, and discontent. And no matter how good things look out there, they're not okay in here. And then this separates us from God, and then we drink. I hope that makes some sense. It made sense to me. And he says, the fellow goes to bed so intoxicated, he ought to sleep the clock around. Yet early the next morning, he searches madly for the bottle he misplaced the night before. So he can't live sober. He wakes up, he's sober. He may still have the phenomenon of craving, because the alcohol is in his body. And it says, if he can afford it, he may have liquor concealed all over his house to be certain no one gets his entire supply away from him to throw down the waste pipe. And I wrote, why? Well, because we can't live without alcohol. That's towards the end. Anybody else have that? Mm-hmm. And remember, we read on A Vision for You, we can't live it with or without it. And at one point, we'll be at the jumping place off, and we'll wish for the bitter end. As matters grow worse, he uses combination of high-powered sedative and liquor to quiet his nerves so he can go to work. Anybody have nerve issues here? Then comes the day when he simply cannot make it and gets drunk all over again. So there comes a day, we heard it described, the 9-month birthday, 2-month birthday, 9 months, and then we drink again. Why? Because we don't have a spiritual solution yet. If we don't work the steps, at least this is what I see in my life, and I've seen it in the book, I don't know about you, but if I don't have the spiritual solution, then I have no power not to drink. And the other thing is, I need to work it all the time. And so we need to, through steps 1 through 9, we get to that point where we have this relationship with God in step 10. And step 10, 11 is where we keep it going all the time, so we have a daily reprieve. But now they're talking about before people have even started to work the steps in this chapter to get them ready to do that. It says, then he begins to appear at hospitals and sanitariums, or what we call treatment centers. It says, this is by no means a comprehensive picture of the true alcoholic, as our behavior patterns vary, but this description should identify him roughly. So in other words, people drink, or people use drugs all the time. You can't stop using, right? You can't stop taking something to change the way you feel. You have no power over it. You keep doing it over and over again. So they ask you the question, why did I behave like this? If hundreds of experiences have shown me that one drink means another debacle with all its tending suffering and humiliation, why did I take the first drink? It's a pretty good question, isn't it? Why can't he stay in the water wagon? What has become of my common sense and willpower that he still sometimes displays with respect to other matters? So this is when people are starting to feel really hopeless. Anybody remember that? Right towards the end? You can't stop drinking, you don't know why. Perhaps there will never be a full answer to these questions. Now, the book is going to tell you the answer to this in the third step, when it talks about our selfishness and self-centeredness and how we can't live sober in the world without God. But what they want you to see now is you're powerless to keep from taking the first drink, and once you drink, you can't control it. It says, opinions vary considerably is why the alcoholic reacts differently from normal people. We are not sure, but here's the key point. Once a certain point is reached, little can be done for him. Once you're a real alcoholic, we cannot answer the riddle. Now, little cannot be done for him, but that was before we had this program of recovery. We know that while the alcoholic keeps away from drink, as he may do for months or years, he reacts much like other men. I'm not sure if that's really true. Because I didn't react like normal people sober. But right now they're focusing on how we act once we drink and why would we take the first drink. Does that make sense? We're clearly positive that once he takes any alcohol, whatever, into his system, something happens, both in the bodily and mentally sense, which makes it virtually impossible for me to stop. Anybody relate to that? And so they're hammering this home. And it says, the experience of any alcoholic will abundantly confirm this. So is this anybody's experience here? All right, so here's what they say, and then we'll start with this, and we'll cover this next week, if I didn't scare everybody off. These observations would be academic and pointless if we never took the first drink. So it's a solution to our lack of control is not to drink, right? Just say no. Thereby setting the terrible cycle in motion. And here's the key. Therefore, the main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than his body. So we can't change our body, right? And we have to change our thinking. And the way we change our thinking is through the steps. Because my thinking told me that it was okay to drink. Right? Anybody else say that? It had to be, you wouldn't have drank. Nobody would wake up and do the things we did and then drink again. I mean, it's insane. But we didn't have the power to say no. So that now they're going to discuss, and we'll cover this next week, why we can't say no when our mind tells us to drink. And then they hope that they're getting ready for There Is a Solution. So you see how the book's laid out? And it's very important, no matter how long you've been sober, to understand these things. Because if I'm powerless, I'm powerless today not to, I have no control over alcohol, how much I drink. And the other thing, I have no power is to choose not to drink today. I have no power on my own to choose not to drink today. So why did I say that? Well, the only power I have, and I've learned this, is to choose to seek the power that keeps me from drinking. That's where people get confused. They come to AA, they know they can't drink, and they want to be able to get the choice not to drink. The choice will never come from me and what my thinking and how I figure it out. The choice has to come from God. And the way we get that relationship with God is with the steps. So I hope that made some sense. So we'll stop there. We have some time. 7 minutes, so I did pretty good. And then we'll pick it up next week. Thank you.